estimate by the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, Trump's proposals would add $7.5 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. Harris's proposals, by contrast, would add an estimated $3.5 trillion. 23 Nobel Prize-winning economists just endorsed Kamala Harris's economic program. In short, among the many things Donald Trump is not, is someone familiar with basic economics. I'm Mel Gertoff for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 29, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Eliza Yurkov, Mel Gertov, and Sam Bowman. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Mark Moran, Farah Siddiqui, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for an interview with Ken Jones. He'll be speaking with Amanda Bullock about the Portland Book Festival.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The annual Portland Book Festival is our city's biggest literary event and one of the most popular in the entire West Coast. This year's festival takes place Saturday, November 2nd, just a few days away, and features onstage discussions with over 80 authors, pop-up readings, children's story times, a book fair, writing workshops, and because it's Portland, a variety of local food trucks. This year's author lineup includes Richard Powers, Ani DeFranco, Rachel Kushner, Danzy Zena, R.O. Kwan, Chelsea Beaker, Willie Vlaughton, Kimberly King Parsons, Renee Watson, Tessa Hall, Julia Phillips, and Carson Ellis, to name just a few. To give us a preview, we're fortunate to have Amanda Bullock, Senior Artistic Director at Literary Arts, live in the KBOO studios with us. Amanda, thanks for coming back again to talk about this great annual celebration of books, writers, and readers.
Thanks for having me.
Amanda, this is your 10th Portland Book Festival.
Yeah.
Congratulations. After all those years and all that time you've put into planning each festival, including this one, what do you especially look forward to on Saturday?
It's really busy, but there's usually a moment where you can, or I can, pause and look around and just honestly see everybody having a good time, hopefully in the not rain. And
I've seen you at the book festival, and
yeah,
pauses are very rare.
There are, but there's usually a chance to just, because like the reason I do what I do is I like to bring people together in community, and having that moment where you're like, oh, people are having fun, people really love this, like we made this thing, is so that's what I look forward to, is you don't know exactly when it's going to hit, but hopefully at some point I'll have
I get that feeling every year. Mm-hmm. And I have nothing to do with the organization.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's just part of that community. Now, you start planning the festival lineup a year or so in advance. What's the process look like at that early stage, and how has that evolved, if at all, over the last 10 years?
Yeah, it comes, the lineup really comes basically from a couple directions. I do have, you know, strong relationships with publishers and publicists, and I'm talking to people about who we should be considering, but we also have an open submissions program, and so we have folks that are sending us their books excuse me, for consideration for the festival. And I'm just gonna take a sip of water. And so that's a great way, especially to get local authors in.
And you're looking at what's coming out in the
yeah,
next year.
So we're looking at those, like some of the authors you named with the really big books. Like, I'm pursuing those, but we also have people who are coming to us for consideration. So it takes a long time, partly because we're really looking at pairing the work. So we're not necessarily just looking at like, oh, do we like this book or do we like this person?
Yes, I want to talk about that too, because there's panels. But first, I want to talk about maybe the headliners, Ani DiFranco and Richard Powers. Those are ticketed events, so that's not included in the general festival admission pass. It's for an additional charge, and there's variations on that. You could pay a little to get in, and then you could pay more to get the book.
Just a little bit over. Those two are at the Schnitzer, and it's just partly just to make sure everyone gets in easily. So for just $5, you get a guaranteed seat at the Schnitzer for either of those events. For a little bit more, you also get a book included, and you get it's a seat closer to the front. So it's just the cost of the book for that kind of more upfront seat with the book, and you'll get your book right when you come in. And so I think that that'll be really nice for those events. And those are very different. You know, Ani's book is a picture book called Show Up and Vote.
Show Up and Vote.
Yeah.
Very timely.
Yes. And like a nice way to kind of include the current moment, and in this positive way that's more about just promoting, you know, talking about voting and democracy. And of course Ani's amazing, and we'll talk about more than that, but and then Richard Powers' new book is really stunning. So
Playground, and I read it was long listed for the 2024 Booker Prize. Very prestigious.
It's like it was called like the Overstory Underwater. So it's about like the ocean and
instead
AI.
Of the forest.
Yeah, AI and grief. It's really amazing. I really loved it. So,
yeah, what a great writer.
Yeah, he's really an American treasure. He's such a thoughtful person. So it should be very different, but like equally engrossing conversations.
And of course, those are the ticketed events, but all the other events on Saturday are included with the festival pass.
Correct.
And we mentioned there are onstage discussions featuring over 80 authors, and mostly on panels. And that's where those themes come in. You're kind of getting the right books in. For example, there's one on deceit and dark humor, and that features Rachel Kushner and Danzy Senna, who both have current bestsellers, and they're with Matt Johnson, who's moderating.
Yes.
Another well-known author, and I think he teaches at University of Oregon, too. Mm-hmm. How do you come up with the panels and the pairings?
Most of our panels are two authors and a moderator, so we're really looking at thematic connections between those two books. And like on the surface, those books might seem really different, but the reason I put them together is they both feature heroines who are just explicitly lying in like different ways. Rachel's book is about a woman who's basically working as a spy. So
creation, right?
Yeah, pretty obvious that she's lying. And then in Danzy's book, this woman is lying to her family about like working on this TV show and kind of the projects that she's doing.
And her book is colored television.
Yeah, it's great. And so that's where the deceit comes in. And then they're just both really funny. So that's where the dark humor comes in.
And Matt
in.
Johnson is too. I've read some
and
of his
books. He's really great. He did the festival last for his novel Invisible Things. And then he's such a great moderator. So he was my first choice, like dream moderator for that pairing.
Yeah, what a great panel.
Thank you. I'm excited about that one.
But of course, there's others. So people should consult the program about that. You mentioned kind of discovering some writers through maybe their own submissions or maybe suggestions, recommendations from other people. There's always a great mix of these debut authors mixed in with these celebrities, luminaries like the Richard Powers and the Ani DiFrancos of the world. It's always been a big part of the festival for me to find someone new. Do you have any suggestions for writers who might not be on the average reader's radar?
Yeah. One event that I'm really excited about is the Atlas Obscura event, which is for their book Wildlife, which is about the wonders of the natural world. But one of the books that's being featured in that is by a local author, and it's called The Mushroom Color Atlas by Julie Beeler, which is about being able to dye things from the pigments in mushrooms. But it's also just, it's really great, and it's going to be really fun. And the Cascades Raptor Center is going to be there. So that's just like, I don't know, and that one's at 10 a.m., so I think that would be a fun way to start your day. We also have local author Ferris Jaber, who kind of on the same tip, his book Becoming Earth is a really interesting kind of different perspective of nature and climate, and is about the story of our planet. So I think that would also be really great.
There's a theme here.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that's kind of...
Well, I noticed, I read a lot and I interview a lot of writers, and in, the environment is a big part. Well, that's Richard Powers' book is a big part of that, too.
We've got, it's spooky season. We've got Hauntings is a good one, too, with Layla Martinez, whose book Wormwood was long listed for the National Book Award for Translated Literature. It's translated from the Spanish. And Alyssa Alirian with Smother Moss. So that one should also be, I think, a really fun, like, sophisticated, spooky, witchy kind of vibe. Yeah.
So a chance to discover something new.
Definitely.
And I know in the past you've always given us the guideline, be adventurous.
Yeah, go out be there, curious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Try to discover something there, and there's plenty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, like you said, like
there's almost past, too much.
I know, I know. Your pass includes all but those two events that have the extra tickets. So if you think that the subject of a talk sounds interesting or you're kind of interested in it, then go check it out, because... Well, what have you got to lose? You're already there, and like,
right?
Yeah.
So. Well, you might lose a few bucks at the book fair.
I hope, yeah. Yeah. Well, you, but your pass includes a voucher for $5 off. So, really, you've already spent the $5. So,
right.
Yeah.
Now, you always do a good job at the festival of including something for everyone of all ages and types of books. Maybe we could start with the youngest age group with events at the Judy.
Mm-hmm.
There's story times.
Yeah, we love working with the Judy, and Emily Arrow's back to lead the story times and host those. But we have some really great picture book authors, including the Moyle sisters with Hello Lucky. We have Max Greenfield, who is known for his role as Schmidt on New Girl. He's a picture book author, and he'll be there for Good Night Thoughts. The Princess in Black series is going to be there. Some local authors like Waka T. Brown, who's an Oregon Book Award winner. There's story times from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So they're about every 20 minutes. And so families
and the author is the one reading from the book then?
The author or the illustrator. Oh. Some of the folks coming are illustrators. And some books like Ellie Mae Dreams Big, we actually have the author and the illustrator both there. So it just kind of depends. But yeah, it should be really fun. It's a really nice spot to spend some time during the festival day.
And we should also mention not just the younger kids for the story times. You also cover middle graders and young adults, which is a very big segment of the book market right now.
Yes. Yeah. We have middle grade 2 and YA, and kids youth 17 and under or with high school ID get in free. Just completely free. And so middle grade's also over at the Judy, and we have some great middle grade authors like Chanel Miller. We have the Last Kids on Earth series. We have all just so many folks. And then the YA stage is in Shemansky Park, right in the center of the book festival. And so that also includes our WITS, Writers in the Schools anthology launch. So we'll have local high schoolers reading their work as well. Yeah, you're making me excited.
I was excited.
I'm like, it's going to be great.
Just prepping for the interview and reading all this stuff. And we've got like 4 minutes left, so I got to decide what else we can talk about. I mean, I've got a lot more questions. But one thing I want to get into is you're expanding the genres. Of course, there's usually general fiction, nonfiction, poetry, picture books, graphic novels even. But you're expanding more offerings now with mystery, horror, and even romance.
Yeah, yeah. We've had that kind of stuff before, but I do think just, you know, where the festival is, because it's a book festival, is downstream from what books are coming out, and we're seeing these kinds of books more popular in general. And so I think you see that reflected in the festival. It's not like I went in and was like, oh, we're gonna have a ton of horror this year. There's just a lot of great horror being published. So we have Stephen Graham Jones, who's just like a master of the genre, with Brian Evanson, who's going to be great.
Oh, yes, Brian Evanson. I've read his books.
Yeah, he's wonderful. And yeah, we have two romance events. We have, of course, like mega superstar Casey McQuiston. Their new book is The Pairing. And then we have Lily Chu and Caitlin Doyle in another romance event. There's also a YA romance event as well. So you can have a love-filled day, like if that's what you're looking for. You can also have a horror-filled and mystery-filled day, if that's what you're looking for. So maybe a balance between the two would be a good plan.
No,
yeah, Andrew Child's coming, who writes the Jack Reacher series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so that's morning. Kind of thriller.
Is yeah, okay? Yeah. So that's
mystery
exciting.
Thrillers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's taking over for his brother too, which I think is an interesting conversation. Like how you take over this really long running, like really well known character, and co-write with a family member, and then like get ready to kind of take that story as your own.
People don't want that character to go away. Huh?
Exactly.
Sherlock Holmes syndrome.
Something like that.
Now, we should talk about the pop-up events. Those take place at the Portland Art Museum. And generally, an author is paired with an appropriate work of art.
Yes.
Who decides which author gets which work of art?
Yeah, we do. Actually, this year we have a new team member, Jenna Nishimura, and so she did the pop-up pairings, and we're in the Through Lines exhibit at the museum, which is really cool, because with the construction, they've asked the curators to select pieces on different themes, and so they're mixed. The collection is mixed from the different sort of areas of the museum and different media. So it's a really neat way to highlight the books and like highlight the different offerings that the museum has. So
do they usually read the book then that the author is promoting?
Usually,
in the pop-up,
most people say this would be perfect with this painting
or this sculpture.
Yeah, we try to theme it best we can. Some of them are like really like chef's kiss spot on, but some of them are a little more abstract, but we try to be really, really thoughtful about it.
Well, there's always fun. It's like a crowd gathers around the author it's a very intimate space.
Yeah, it's
here in the art museum, you've got somebody reading to you and the sense of community.
Yeah, we have free workshops as part of free with your festival pass as part of the pop-ups this year too in the psychedelic posters exhibit. And so there's going to be drop-in writing workshops over there.
Now, we just got about a minute left, but maybe talk a little bit about Cover to Cover, which actually began yesterday.
Yeah, it's kicked off.
And goes through Sunday, and it's a number of events. I've got interactive book presentations. Last year, too, you did a literature-inspired comedy shows and multi-genre storytelling events.
Yeah, there's
and that's all over town.
All over town. There's, I know at Grand Gesture, which we were talking about, which is a new romance bookstore downtown. She's doing a Halloween event on ghosting, like dating ghosting, like getting ghosted, which I think is really great. And I know we all have horror stories.
Literally ghosted.
Yeah, literally ghosted. There's a pop-up dinner at Xiao Ye with the cookbook author Christina Cho on Friday. Obviously, you need to buy your food. It's not free, but that's happening Friday and Saturday. And then actually Friday night before the festival at the Art Museum, we have Reader's Night, which is a sliding scale ticket. So it's all the way from free up to different suggested prices. And folks can come and shop the book fair early, including the big festival.
And that had a different name last year. But
yeah, it used to be called something. Now it's Reader's Night. So you can shop the Powell's big bookstore. You can shop all the booths. There's over 70 exhibitor booths as part of the festival. If you know you're going to buy a bunch the next day, it's a great time to come and not have to carry it around. And it's a great time where there's just fewer people and it's a little calmer. And you can check out that space of the festival on Friday.
I'm excited and exhausted at the same time.
Yeah.
There's so much. We could probably talk for another 20 minutes on what's going to happen on Saturday. But Amanda, many thanks for joining us live at KBOO today. And thanks for all you and literary arts do for writers and readers across the city and the Pacific Northwest, the country for that matter.
Thank you. Right back at you.
We've been talking with Amanda Bullock, director of the Portland Book Festival, which takes place this Saturday, November 2nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets in advance at pdxbookfest.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Eliza Yurkov. There is a growing movement to end the U.S. economic blockade on Cuba and remove Cuba from the U.S. state sponsors on terrorism list. Protests have been held about those issues in the weeks leading up to the UN General Assembly vote on ending the U.S. blockade. Diana Block is with the Bay Area Cuba Solidarity Network. She spoke with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg before the General Assembly vote about the blockade and Cuba's overall relationship with the U.S.
You're having this action on Saturday at the Grand Lake Theater to end the embargo. This is something that comes up every year at the UN where there's this overwhelming vote to end the embargo or the blockade. Do you expect the same thing this year?
Yeah, most definitely. And we use the term blockade because it really more accurately describes what the state of affairs is, that there is a really total blockade that the U.S. has imposed on Cuba for over 60 years. and that the whole world, except for two notable exceptions, stands with Cuba on the need to end the blockade. The notable exceptions are the United States and Israel, which seem to be taking the lead on repression and genocide worldwide. And so it's very important.
How about those little island nations that sometimes vote with the U.S.?
Yeah, there have been abstentions. For last year, Ukraine abstained, and perhaps a couple of other nations abstained. They didn't vote for the blockade, which is only U.S. and Israel have done that. But there are some abstentions, which obviously are for political reasons because of the way the alignment with the U.S. and Israel materially. And the rest of the world plainly sees that this is illegal, harmful, damaging blockade that impacts all the people of Cuba and impacts everything, such as the Cuban power system, which has been in the news for the past few days due to the really terrible blackout that occurred, which almost there's no way to see it except as connected to the blockade, because the Cubans cannot purchase fuel and they can't replace their outdated equipment due to the blockade and all the many financial restrictions that are imposed upon their trade. And this isn't only a matter of the U.S. and Cuba. The way the U.S. has constructed the coercive measures against Cuba, it involves third-party countries and the ways in which the U.S. then takes action against those third-party countries that dare to trade with Cuba.
They have managed to survive all these years by getting around it somehow or by finding allies in various places.
Well, yeah, they have. They do have many allies. That is true. So people power and allies, international solidarity is another way of putting it, are the ways in which Cuba manages to survive, persist, and in many respects thrive despite what the U.S. is doing. But we can see at this point that the U.S. has actually ratcheted up the restrictions against trade with Cuba. And Biden has gone along with that, even though initially in his 2020 platform, he said he was going to take Cuba off the state sponsors of terrorism list. He never did. He backed down on that. It's more politically convenient for him to continue to keep Cuba on this list, which has nothing to do with terrorism. In fact, it has acted against terrorism in so many regards. And yet it is left on this list, which further complicates their economic relationships with many countries around the world, since it comes with a whole set of sanctions.
So you had the opening to Cuba under Obama, then Trump came in and reversed much or maybe all of that. And so what would you say about Biden and a possible Harris administration? You just mentioned Biden. Has he done anything at all to loosen up the restrictions?
Not really. I can't say that he has. Of course, we insist that if there were a Harris administration, that it would reexamine. I mean, Harris has in the past, like other politicians, has expressed concern about the impacts of the embargo, but nothing has been expressed recently. So we can only hope and advocate. So this is why this UN vote is very significant, because it is coming before this election. It is another advisory to the U.S. that they should change their Cuba policy. They should be wanting to work and with countries around the world and align themselves more globally with countries who do see that this blockade is really a criminal act against Cuba and its people. Certainly, we hope that a new administration would have a new policy towards Cuba. And that is part of the timing of this human billboard flyering. It's really trying to build awareness.
Is this across the country as well?
Yes, there are, not the exact, this weekend, October 26th and 27th, there are going to be actions across the country in advance of the United Nations vote, which is going to be on the 29th and 30th. And also on the 30th in San Francisco, there will be another rally that we are participating in that will be at Powell and Market at 4:30. And that will be to talk about the results of the vote, because by then we will know what the UN vote has been and we will be able to shine a light. We don't really expect that it will be different from previous years, but we will be able to speak specifically about the vote this year on next Wednesday, the 30th.
Any sense of what the vote in Congress might be if there was such a vote?
Okay, that's beyond my political predictiveness capacities, but I will say that there are many members of Congress who have tried to introduce resolutions, to introduce changes in Cuba policy. Unfortunately, they have not really been successful in doing that, but we continue to try and work with different people in Congress. We look forward to working. I mean, Barbara Lee has been someone who we have been able to work with and who has a more positive Cuba policy. We're not sure, of course, who her replacement will be, but we hope that we will be able to work with that person around developing or advocating for a better Cuba policy. These are all hopes. We continue to be hopeful and we continue to be persistent, because there is no reason, there is absolutely no reason why a country that is 90 miles away from the U.S. should be suffering a blackout of the proportions that Cuba and the Cuban people just had to endure because they can't purchase parts for their system, for their generating system, can't purchase fuel. This is really not the way that our country should be dealing with a neighbor. And people all over the United States, polls have shown that people advocate for dropping the blockade. But unfortunately, those polls have not translated yet into action on the part of any government administration in the past 8 years anyway.
So there has been some cooperation between the U.S. and Cuba on certain issues, right?
Yeah, there has been some more opening of, as you pointed out, during Obama, there was much more opening. And so we, of course, thought that was positive, although we wanted more, because we really want the end to the blockade altogether. But yes, there have been different openings. There have been a few minor openings to increase business, private business development within Cuba. And that has also been welcomed by the Cuban government.
Yeah, American business wants to get into Cuba.
American business does want to get into Cuba. Right. But because that is the case, it seems like it's the larger geopolitical strategies that are at issue, and the fact that the U.S. is threatened by any kind of alternative to its U.S. capitalist model of economic and social development, or not development, as one could say. And that is what Cuba offers to the world. It offers an example of a socialist project. Cubans wouldn't say that they have accomplished that socialist project, because there have been so many obstacles. But it is a development in process. And they have done amazingly, as you point out, even though they cannot trade, they cannot travel with the country that is closest to them, the major power, the U.S. And the Cubans are eager to establish friendly relationships, but that has not been possible. And I mean, Obama did travel to Cuba, which was wonderful. It was a first step. Unfortunately, that first step was not followed by other steps. It was, in fact, reversed. And we really call upon whoever becomes the next president to shift and change categorically the relationship with Cuba. It does not do the United States any good in reality, and it certainly doesn't do Cuba any good. And we think there are, well, many, many reasons, and please come to our rally on this Saturday, October 26th, to find out more reasons, because we will have flyers, we will have information, we will have speakers, but mainly our goal is to do outreach to people, I think, do not understand how dire the situation is for Cuba at this point in time.
And anything else you want to add?
I really appreciate you covering this. I think Cuba has been in strong solidarity with Palestine in this past period. We know that the Bay Area is very activated. KPFA has been very activated regarding coverage of Palestine. I think when we say Cuba supports Palestine, now we have to support Cuba. It is really critical for people to see them as part of international solidarity in this era, and that they are both leading struggles against the U.S. empire. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Diana Block of the Bay Area Cuba Solidarity Network speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Eliza Yurkov. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
I'm out to sing songs that'll prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops,